All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back for another episode of Hardwood Knox. Today with you, it's me, Andrew Bailey, and of course, Dan Favale on the other end of the virtual line in New York City. We're going to be talking free agency. Surprise, surprise. It's something I'm sure you didn't expect us to talk about in the offseason, but we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. We kind of wanted to do a winners-losers type of a podcast. We're each going to take a few teams that we liked, a few teams that we didn't like in terms of what they did in free agency, and not just free agency, because some of these teams supplemented with trades too. So that's obviously a big part of the offseason as well. The big winner, obviously, the Golden State Warriors. I don't know how much time we need to spend on them. It's obvious they won the offseason to a degree that people have basically forgotten that the Cavaliers won the championship. Like, this is all anyone's talking about at this point. And the obvious reason is Kevin Durant. So, Dan, what do you make of the move? Do you like it for Durant? Obviously, you like it for the Warriors. What do you think?
Well, they lost Maurice Spates, so I don't really see how you call their offseason a win. I mean, it was just a good ad. I know there were, I think we talked about this with Adam, or at least I debated it with him off the podcast once. He didn't want Durant on the Warriors. It didn't really have anything to do with parity. He just didn't think it was necessarily going to work. He said it could, but when you have all those cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, that it would get a little crowded. But I know we're guilty of drumming up these super teams in advance. We did it with the Lakers in 2012, the Heat in 2010, the Cavaliers in 2015. But you look at this team, this culture, you have Klay Thompson already saying that he's going to sacrifice like Manu Ginobili did. This is a guy in his prime, in his mid-20s, saying that he doesn't care about points. He's just going to go for the championships. How does it not work? And I know the bigger concern would be, will Durant be able to assimilate into the Warriors' play style? My gut feeling, maybe it won't be right away, but of course he will be. He can score off the catch for starters. He's played off the ball with Russell Westbrook before. But more importantly to me, you don't join this team if that's not your plan. This isn't a team that he built like LeBron in Cleveland or necessarily like LeBron in Miami. He chose to join this situation. So while I think there will be growing pains, it's tough for me to imagine them facing the same obstacles that some of their peers, historical peers, encountered just because of the way this team was formed, what we know about their play style, and what we already know about the Warriors' incumbent nucleus.
Yeah, I'm with all of that. And when I look at the specific players on the Warriors, this is already a team that's predicated on ball movement and like good relationships among teammates. And one thing that's been talked about a lot, and I think it's important, is last season or the last two seasons, whenever Klay Thompson would get on kind of one of his heaters, you could see Stephen Curry freaking out on the bench, or, you know, everybody on the team would be feeding him. And the same goes when Stephen Curry gets on one of his runs. And I think that sort of team first mentality is probably one of the reasons that Kevin Durant went there. And I think all of these guys understand that, yes, we may average a few less points individually, but it's going to be better overall as a team. And there's so many unselfish personalities already there that I mean, I can maybe see some growing pains for a month or two, but it's almost seamless.
The same, I'm with you there. And I think it helps even further for them that you already have a guy in Draymond Green who doesn't care about scoring. Mm-hmm. That's been proven. And to hear Klay Thompson now say the same thing and to hear Stephen Curry say that after the meeting, it makes so much sense, almost too much sense. How does it not work? And we're not talking about one of those situations where in Cleveland we definitely underestimated how much they would need to cover up for Irving and Love defensively when LeBron first came. None of these guys of the core four, none of them should be a defensive minus. They can all be defensive pluses. Mm-hmm. I think you can argue Curry is the weakest defender of the bunch, and he's still, I think, even on some of his worst nights. So it's just looking at it on paper and just knowing what we know about all of them. And it's also, like you said, it really seemed like Durant was looking for something that only the Warriors could give him. I'm not talking about just a dynasty. I'm not saying he left because of Russell Westbrook. It just seemed like he really wanted that friendship feel that the Warriors give off. And it seems to me that that was almost the biggest reason why he left Oklahoma City, because you never got the sense that they were all as tight as Golden State is now. And maybe that's because time sort of taught them that, like, they're going to break up, because we saw James Harden leave. We saw Reggie Jackson leave. We saw Serge Ibaka now leave. But it just seemed like he really wanted to be a part of the Warriors' culture, even more so than he did their title contention bandwagon.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And you could see, as recently as this most recent playoff run, that it's not all hunky-dory with the Thunder. There were so many times when the guys were cussing each other out in timeouts and on the floor and stuff. And you just don't really get that sense with the Warriors. I know Draymond Green has had a couple of blow-ups with the coaching staff and whatnot. But for the most part, it's such a cohesive group of guys that just all seem to have fun playing with each other.
Absolutely. And I guess we should sort of put that to bed just because.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap that up, I just wanted to, so as you know, I've been tweeting out which teams have added the most wins over a replacement player over the course of the off season. The Warriors, who won 73 games last season, have added 17 and a half wins over replacement player. So they're going to go on to a 91 and negative eight season.
I wouldn't put it past them.
And it's, so just one more thing on that too, is it's not just Durant for this Warriors offseason. Pachulia and David West, I'm pretty sure they combined for over 10 wins over replacement player. And just those two alone, that's more of an addition than any other team in the league made.
Oh,
with,
wow.
With their entire offseason haul. So a lot of people who are freaking out about the Warriors losing Bogut, Barnes, Azili, Barbosa, Spates, and Rush, like, even with that massive exodus of Warriors to other teams around the league, they're still plus 18 for wins added. It's insane. So the Durant haul is obviously the big one, but I think people are underselling Pachulia and West, and I think people are overselling this issue that they're going to have problems with depth. Because I don't think it's going to be a problem.
No, I definitely agree. I think the one thing that kind of I didn't understand was bringing back Anderson Varejão when you already have Pachulia and West.
When they got him last year, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm floored at the Pachulia West thing. And it's, you know what I love about David West is he is so blatantly just ring chasing
right now.
he went from Indiana to San Antonio, and then just left San Antonio for the Warriors when he probably could have had a bigger role in San Antonio, knowing Tim Duncan's now gone, and Boban too, and Diaw. So he's just so blatantly like, let me get this ring.
Yep.
It cost me $11 million.
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder how much it's cost him total. Because that first year when he declined his option in Indiana, that was 12 or 11 right there. And then he signed for less than he could have gotten on the open market. And then again, for the second straight year, he signs for less than he could have gotten on the open market. This guy's cost himself like $30 million to get
right.
that ring.
It's definitely more than 20.
That's crazy. I'm fine with it.
No, I mean, I'm fine seeing that stuff. But in addition to the Warriors, the team that had my second favorite offseason, and you actually had to remind me about them before we even started recording this, was the Jazz.
Yeah,
I just feel
really
like all of their moves came out of nowhere. None of them were blockbusters, and yet they all just make so much sense and should make this team so good. George Hill, Joe Johnson, who will probably be a phenomenal catch and shoot guy with them. They just got to steer him out of those isolations. And Boris Diaw, he's just the perfect front court fit for them. Like, I'm trying to look for like a weakness in this team. It's probably still the point guard position, just because Hill isn't a true point guard. We don't really know what Dante Exum is, but like, you have Gordon Hayward, Rodney Hood even did well as a playmaker. I'm trying to look at this team and trying to figure out why wouldn't they be one of the three best in the West at this point.
I'm with you. I picked them fourth the other day, and a lot of people were stunned just because they weren't even in the playoffs last season.
I picked them for fifth last season before the year even started, and now they did this. So, like,
Yeah, when what the thing people don't understand about them missing the playoffs last year is nobody pays attention to the Jazz. They don't realize how many games they missed due to injuries from their from some of their most important players. Like their starting line or their starting front line, Gobert and Favors missed over 40 games combined. And if you do that to any team in the NBA, you knock out their starting power forward and their starting center for that long, it's going to hurt them. But anyway, like back to this offseason. Like you said, all those moves kind of came out of nowhere, but at the same time, they all addressed needs perfectly. Like, you knew that the point guard play had to get better, and all of a sudden, they trade for George Hill, one of the more underrated point guards in the league. Great defender, 40%+ 3-point shooter, a great spot-up guy, which is perfect for the Jazz because they have these wings that can create, so he can just space off of Hayward and Hood, like you said. Joe Johnson, they were looking for sort of a 3-4 type, and all the talk was Jared Dudley or Luol Deng, and then all of a sudden Joe Johnson drops into their lap, and then the one thing they needed at that point was a lot of the Jazz analysts were saying the one thing that this team can't do now is field a lineup of five shooters. We can't have like a 1-5 shooting lineup, which a lot of teams can do, and then they go get Boris Diaw, who can play, you know. I actually think he'll probably play a lot of backup five for them in sort of a five shooting lineup. So it was, I mean, they hit everything out of the park, in my opinion.
I'm right there with you, and I really keep forgetting, and I know I've seen this before. Boris Diaw, like, he could be guaranteed for $7.5 million in 2017, 2018. So if he works out, like, you have
Super
this
cheap.
cheaply priced guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, like if he goes back to Charlotte, Bobcats,
Yeah,
overweight,
you pay him to go
unmotivated,
away.
you just go away, yeah.
Well, and he should, Quinn Snyder should work for him,
Yeah, I
I
think
would
he'll be
think.
good. And he's got a teammate from the French national team that they seem to get along. So I think there's a lot of reasons to think that he'll stay motivated.
I hope he does because it's so fun watching him when he is
It,
motivated.
yeah, for sure.
I'm just, when you look at the roster, and I guess it's probably maybe too presumptive to say this because we don't know what's going to happen with Hill's free agency. We don't necessarily know what Dante Exum is going to be, but just long term, I don't see the fits for Alec Burks or Derek Favors on this squad. I'm just like, I almost like the idea of, and I think you brought this up to me, was bringing Favors off the bench so that the Jazz can get. Maybe even start, like, have a four shooting lineup to start the game.
Yeah, I like that idea. I don't know how hard of a sell it would be to Derek Favors, who's been starting there for a few years, but I think if you could bill it as we're gonna make the toughest second unit in the league with Exum, Burks, Joe Johnson, Derek Favors, and Boris Diaw, and you're gonna be the centerpiece of that second unit. Just imagine Derek Favors against backup bigs, like he would feast. But I'm with you, especially on Alec Burks. I think he's going to have to show something in the first few months of the season to avoid the trading block, because he is the one guy who doesn't seem to have completely bought into, or I don't really love that phrase, but the Quinn Snyder form of basketball. So I think there is a question mark with him, and I would almost rather play Joe Ingles than him at the start of the season, but that's not going to happen because Alec makes five times as much money. But I'm with you. There is some funky fits, but as of right now, they're 10 or 11 deep, and that's kind of a nice problem to have.
Right. I'm excited to see the different lineups that Quinn Snyder runs out. And I guess the thing with starting is that you can always stagger minutes. I don't
Yeah,
think
for
Quinn
sure.
Snyder necessarily did a great job of that last season, but you could predominantly play Favors with the second unit and
Yeah.
still start him. So maybe they'll try that.
And the
Because I
other
also
thing, go ahead.
I just want to see more from Trey Lyles too. I
Same
hammered the
here.
Jazz for drafting him.
Same
I was
here.
so against. I was like, that was one of the worst picks. And he looks like a stud.
Yeah,
I
he's
know
awesome.
that they envision him as this Draymond Green type player, and I'm still sort of skeptical going that far, but just watching him was so much fun.
He has so far to go on defense, but what he can do as a shooter and a playmaker and like an off the bounce guy from the four spot is already pretty impressive. And I was dead wrong about that draft pick too. Let's pivot to some teams we didn't like real quick, and then we'll jump back to teams we did like. One that I did not like was the Clippers.
Because they did nothing.
That's the main reason, actually. They bring back, I think, a lot of guys who they didn't really help him that much. Jamal Crawford, the three-time sixth man of the year, really, from a bottom line standpoint, didn't help him much. Austin Rivers didn't help him much. Wesley Johnson was probably the best player of that crop that they brought back, which is saying something. And then the guys that they do add, Maurice Spates was one of the biggest negatives in the league last year by wins over replacement player. I actually think the Felton and the Bass moves are pretty good, but it doesn't offset the rest of their sort of
Losing
meh offseason.
Cole Aldrich could end up being huge for
Huge.
them because like Spates and Bass aren't going to replace
No.
anything that he provided. I just don't know what you were expecting them to do if you look
I
at
guess they
like.
didn't really have any cap space to work with or anything like that.
No, I mean Griffin, Jordan, Paul, and Redick cost more than $71.5 million on their own.
So maybe they're not done yet. Do you think there is a trade out there that would make their offseason a winner? I don't know.
I don't necessarily consider them a loser because you're essentially getting a healthy Blake Griffin back, but if I'm them, I would trade Griffin just because 2017 free agency is coming up. Chris Paul is going to be available too. You could probably get a king's ransom for him to the point where you don't necessarily sacrifice anything now, but you've retooled in the event that Chris Paul also leaves over the summer. I don't think Blake Griffin makes the Clippers worse, but I honestly think you could probably right now you could flip him to the Celtics or a Brooklyn pick and maybe Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley
That's what I was gonna ask you. If they did a deal with the Celtics centered around Jay Crowder, do you think that makes them better?
I guess it depends upon what the complementary pieces are. I think if you get one of Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder, especially Jay Crowder because he's under that contract for, what is it, the next 4 years or the next
Yeah.
three?
And I
Yeah,
think he can play the four. I think he would slide right into the starting power forward spot for them.
and I think that'd be a great fit. So you could justify that they would be just as good. And then if Chris Paul leaves, you still have this guy who's relatively young, 3 years on this cheaply priced deal. And you're going to get other pieces too. Like maybe the Celtics would throw in Kelly Olynyk. And that would be a great get for the Clippers as well. So I would trade Blake Griffin.
So here, go ahead.
That's it. Like I would just trade him, which is just in a nutshell. I don't particularly like Griffin in Boston with Al Horford there, to be honest.
Yeah.
But if they're willing to give up those pieces and your Doc, I would do it. I guess the upshot there is, and this would be the big one, is you've already given 3 years and $42 million or whatever to Jamal Crawford.
Yeah.
That's not somebody you're going to be able to sell off, most likely.
How old
So,
is he going to be at the end of that deal? 40?
I always forget.
39?
He's so durable. I always
I
forget
know,
how.
that is.
He's 39, so he's gonna be.
He'll be
Yeah, he's
39 at the
36.
end.
Yeah, he's
Okay.
39. So, it's just. Like, what do you do with that deal? Like, some of
Yeah.
these deals only make sense because the Clippers have their current roster. Like, if you all of a sudden trade Blake Griffin or you're preparing for a rebuild in the worst case scenario that Chris Paul leaves, can you justify paying $11 million per year to Austin Rivers?
No, you cannot.
I'm honest to God shocked that Austin Rivers is making roughly double what Wesley Johnson is in
Yeah, that's
each year
crazy.
next year. So,
One more thing on the Clippers before we move on too. You touched on it, but I think the Cole Aldrich loss is a lot bigger than a lot of people realize. He alone, I think, added around 5 wins to the Timberwolves. And I understand that he's not going to get on the floor much behind DeAndre Jordan. But if they were going to throw that much money at players coming back, you might as well throw it at the most effective guy. I don't know how hard they tried to keep him, but that was of everyone that was a free agent for the Clippers this year, that was the best one, and they let him go.
my gut feeling there as to why they probably wouldn't have paid that kind of money for him. I'm not necessarily saying it's right, but when you have the NBA's Iron Man in DeAndre Jordan
Yeah.
playing, as many minutes as he does is Carl Aldrich. Like Andre, excuse me, DeAndre Jordan averaged less than 34 minutes per game last year, which was his fewest in the last two seasons. That's still, if he plays 33, are you Carl Aldrich for 15 minutes a game? Do you want to pay that much? But again, I would have rather seen them spend that money on him than invest as much as they did in Rivers or Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. His deal, too, was, how much was it? 3 years, $22 million? Is that right. It?
It was a good deal. And the irony is I don't like him in Minnesota even a little bit. Really? I already hate that you play Karl-Anthony Towns and Gorgui Dieng together in the starting lineup. I've seen Gorgui Dieng. He shoots jumpers sometimes, so it could, in essence, work. So you need Aldrich. But it, to me, it would just make more sense to use Dieng as that backup five.
That's probably true.
Give Bajelica more spin, but I don't like him in Minnesota, but that's a great deal.
Yeah, it was a steal. I forgot it was that low. But anyway, I didn't like the Clippers. What's one that you didn't love?
I'm not sure if I hated it or am still in like WTF mode over it. What are the Magic doing? Even their 1 year flyer on Jeff Green for $15 million makes so literally weird. No sense. Like he's not. That's not someone that's going to help you like match someone like in a trade. Are they planning on like using him to help match Blake Griffin's salary midseason so he could reunite with Doc and everybody?
Maybe they saw that some like desperate GM every year seems to trade for Jeff Green. So
they were like, we'll sign him now and Doc will give us a first round pick later.
If that's the end game, then I'm all for it. But I'm with you. This is really confusing. Go ahead.
You have Biombo, Jeff Green, Serge Ibaka, Nikola Vucevic, Aaron Gordon. Gordon is going to play some three. He shouldn't.
I hate that, yeah.
But you have those five guys, and of those five, only Green and Gordon should really be playing power forward. Mm-hmm. I'll listen to you to everyone saying that Ibaka can still do it, and we saw him do it in Oklahoma City, but his three-point percentage plummeted, and he's not going to get as many wide-open looks on the Magic either. You're also playing alongside a guy, presumably like Biombo, who's not going to have as much range. So maybe it works with Vucevic, but I just don't see how those five guys work among the two positions, like at the 4-5. Like, okay, Jeff Green and Aaron Gordon are your fours, then Vucevic, Biombo, and Serge Ibaka are your fives. How do you – a so trade weird. Has to be coming, right?
Yeah. And now I think just in the last couple of weeks, Vucevic came out and said, I'm the starter. So there's already going to be chemistry or like fit issues with the way the players see themselves there. And to go back to your point on Serge Ibaka, I don't mind him as a four, but the way that the NBA is going, he becomes more valuable as a five, like every year. Cause I think that's the next wave is these fives that can do everything now. Before it was fours who can do everything. And now you see with Karl-Anthony Towns and Kristaps Porzingis that it's really spread to all five positions. And I think Ibaka could be that kind of a guy. And he's still, I think, only like 25 or 26 years old.
He's that young? I thought he was older.
Yeah, you should look that up. I think he's pretty young still. I'm with you. There's three guys that I would play at the five. And then I really don't like this idea of Aaron Gordon playing the three. I think you're really...
it's awful.
Yeah, you're sacrificing the things that I think would make him unique at the four and really putting him at kind of a disadvantage at the three. It's a weird offseason. They did add wins, technically, but that's one of those things where numbers might lie a little bit because the fits just don't make sense.
Best case scenario, you can bring Biombo off the bench. That's what he did in Toronto, and he seems like the type of guy who probably only cares that he's getting $17 million per year. But, like, okay, you bring him off the bench, but you play Ibaka and Vucevic. I guess that's fine. Then you bring Green off the bench as a four. So maybe it works. It probably doesn't because you're not getting floor spacing from that second unit headlined by Green and Biombo. Aaron Gordon at the three burns it for me. Even if you sell it as, hey, that's your four-guy rotation up front. Aaron Gordon as a three just blows it. For me, any chance of me liking their offseason.
Same here. And I don't really care for it either. I don't really like the Oladipo Ibaka deal in a vacuum either.
It seemed like okay when the Oklahoma City still had Kevin Durant for the Thunder, but now it looks bad for both teams.
Yeah.
Like, just because the Magic better be damn sure that Serge Ibaka is coming back. Otherwise, yeah. That's awful.
Well, and like Oladipo was on pace or on track to be sort of a cornerstone for that team. So now you're basically saying that's Ibaka now.
Right. He slipped off a bit last year, but the Elfrid Payton Oladipo pairing was always kind of iffy. So I think that there's other routes they could have gone, especially if the plan was to sign Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah.
Another team I hated, though, and they at least look fun on paper, but in sort of a way that's just chaotic and stupid, the Bulls.
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
Like they're clearly just trying to sell tickets, right? Or maybe they thought I guess really the thing here is they probably didn't know they had a chance with Dwayne Wade. Otherwise, there's no way in hell you go after Rondo.
Yeah, how long before Wade was the Rondo deal? Like a week, probably. I don't know.
I think it was only like 2 days. Let me see what it was.
So you don't think they had any machinations about Rose or about Wade at that point?
So Roger and Rondo's news reported on July 3rd. They signed Wade on July 6th. Because Remember, they didn't even end up like showing up to the meeting they had with Wade.
Yeah, I did forget that actually.
So I guess that's how you explain it. And in theory, Rondo, Wade, Butler, Mirotić, Lopez could be a good starting five. But neither Butler.
I think they're
Butler,
just going to have to start their offense at like 15 feet.
Right. And neither of those three guys in Butler, Wade, Rondo is used to playing without the ball.
Yeah. One funny little wrinkle in that team. Do you remember when Dwayne Wade like dislocated Rondo's arm?
No.
Many years ago in the playoffs? You should look it up when we're done.
I'm gonna.
Wade like, I can't remember exactly how it goes down, but he totally like takes Rondo down, and maybe you remember this part of it. Rondo's arm is like folded the wrong direction.
Oh yeah,
dislocates his elbow. So that could be fun. See if they confront each other about that.
It could be a fun team, and in theory, they should probably be pretty good. But I somehow did not like their offseason. Like ostensibly, Wade is. Could end up being just a one-year flyer. They gave him a player option for next year.
Yeah. So to me, it seems like this year was a chance for the Bulls to tear it down and like focus on some young guys and kind of rebuild the traditional way that a lot of other teams have to. I think getting rid of Derrick Rose was big for them. Joakim Noah kind of hurts, but at the same time, he's getting older and he's injury prone, so I think that was a smart move too. And all of a sudden it looked like, oh, the Bulls are going to try and get young, get exciting. And then they add Rondo and Wade, who are just kind of a weird fit. Part of the reason a lot of people liked the Rose and Noah deal was because now the ball is going to be in Jimmy Butler's hands, which is what we've sort of been teased with for the last couple of years. Now that's out the window. And then, yeah, I mean, we kind of hinted at it, but the spacing issues unless Wade miraculously shoots like he did in the playoffs last season and Rondo maintains the 36% he had in Sacramento, Jimmy Butler gets back to the way he was in 14-15, it's going to be really crowded there.
Yeah, I'm trying to envision how it would work, but you would need Wade to shoot like he did in the playoffs. And like you said, Rondo to shoot like he did last season, Butler to go 2014-2015, and Mirotić to finally resemble a stretch four.
I think one thing with Wade is, I don't know what his career percentage is. I'm pretty sure it's below 33, just off the top of my head. But if you could just get him to the point where he's willing to shoot threes, I think he would at least be a threat out there. I don't think anybody's just going to leave him alone at the three-point line, regardless of what his career percentage is. So I think if Fred Hoiberg can say, you know, this is maybe the time in your career when you start transitioning into becoming a three-point shooter, kind of like Jason Kidd did in his 30s. I think that would help. But it's going to take some creative tinkering on the part of Hoiberg and the rest of that coaching staff to make that work.
I'm curious to know, for another team I kind of despised their offseason, what you thought about the Knicks.
That's an, I mean, it's another one I don't really like, and I honestly wouldn't mind their off season, if not for the Rose pickup, because I don't think Rose helps him at all, and we can get into that. I don't. He still has a ton of name value, and there's a lot of people. Like I had a friend who was playing pickup basketball the other day, and he said he was talking to somebody there who said that the Bulls are, or the Knicks are title contenders now because they got Derrick Rose. And I just don't think people understand how negatively impactful he was on the Bulls last season, and how there's really no signs in the last couple of years to suggest that he's going to turn that around and suddenly be a positive impact for the Knicks. I mean, you're the Knicks guy. What do you think about that addition?
It's very hit or miss. In theory, it could work if Rose starts passing more on drives because defenses still collapse on him, but he just doesn't do anything at an above average rate right now besides drive. And when he does, he's not even very good. So, it takes the ball out of Melo's and Kristaps's hands, which in essence is fine because they could both, in theory, score off the catch. But now you have Noah in the paint, and that's going to clog things up. It's just a very it's a shaky dynamic, and I'm amazed at how many people think that it's just going to work. I think
Yeah,
they are one of
it's
the
going to
more
take some time.
fragile it's they're one of the more fragile teams, and let's say everything works out, people are projecting them to finish in the top four in the East. Cleveland, Boston,
That's hard
and
for me to say,
Toronto
yeah.
are most definitely better. I would say Detroit is probably better. Charlotte is probably better. Can you guarantee that the Knicks are better than the Wizards, the Bulls, even the Bucks or the Magic at this point? Can you guarantee the Pacers? You can't guarantee that.
I actually tweeted out a list that pretty much included everybody that you said the other day. It's hard to say definitively that they'll be better than any of those teams. I kind of like the addition of Noah if he's healthy, obviously, and that's the big caveat with most of the guys on the Knicks. Because I think he can operate. He's extremely unselfish. I think some of that high post stuff that he did in Chicago would work around Melo and Kristaps. But at the same time, and we've talked about this before, I love Porzingis as a five long term. And I think the more time you can spend with Melo at the four and Porzingis at the five, the better.
Yep.
So Noah kind of fouls that up a little bit. And then back to Rose, one thing you mentioned if he starts passing more, I think he could really find a sort of mid-career resurgence if he really focused on becoming a distributor and a playmaker. Maybe if the Knicks suddenly had D'Antoni again, we could get that. But I don't really see that in his personality. There's nothing from the last couple of years that would suggest that he might transition into that. But maybe he will with a new cast around him.
Especially because it's not necessarily quote unquote his house anymore. And you're probably integrating Jimmy Butler, might have been an ego thing. But I'm curious to see how is Melo going to react if Rose is like taking more shots per game than him. Like
That could
I
be
think
weird, yeah.
Melo is at a point in his career where he doesn't want all the spotlight necessarily. I think over the last 2 years he's really grown as a person and player. And that's coming from someone who's been so hard on him since he came to New York. But does that dynamic work? Like Rose needs the Knicks are banking on Rose making that resurgence that you just said. It's not just a matter of him returning to MVP form. It's questionable if he ever had MVP form, but that's a different issue entirely. It's a matter of him sort of changing his game, and that's one of the biggest risks. Here is my conspiracy theory, though, or
All
I don't even
right,
know if
I'm
it's a
ready for
conspiracy.
this.
The Knicks can't possibly be ignorant enough to want to sign Derrick Rose to a 4 or 5 year contract next summer. That's what I'm hoping. You have Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul who are slated to be free agents. I'm not big on saying the Knicks have a shot at signing superstars. I would put them in the conversation for those two if they're better than they were last year this season. And so you have Rose coming off the books. And then Noah, all I'm saying, seems like a guy maybe the Mavericks would just absorb because they always seem to do this with centers during the offseason. It's different because he has 3 years left on his deal instead of 2 or 3. But, maybe that's a contract if Noah has a good season that doesn't look as bad. one of the biggest holes in my theory, of course, is Noah seems like part of the reason he came to New York, or all of the reason he came to New York, was to play with Rose. And can the Knicks really work it? So like, oh, hey, we're going to get rid of him, even though this is why you came.
How much cap space would they have if just Rose left and they weren't able to unload Noah?
I haven't actually looked at those numbers, but for next season, just like with all the guarantee totals they have right now, let's even say all inclusive, they're going to be at 77.2. That's before their first round pick, before cap holds. So they would have to – the cap's going to
– maybe somebody. The cap's going to be like low hundreds, right?
I still think it's going to end up jumping more than they're saying. But, yeah, you might have to end up giving up a Kyle O'Quinn and maybe one of those –
I'm sure they could make enough room for one max.
I don't think they'll have a problem doing that at all. So you don't necessarily need to move Noah, but that's my theory, is that that will be the Knicks will be in the conversation for Rose and Paul next summer, but like legitimately.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if they get a little bit better this year and maybe one of those guys sees Kristaps Porzingis trending toward being some all-world superstar, I could see that as something that would be appealing to a point guard for sure.
That's a big part of it. If Kristaps makes a leap, I think it makes the Knicks infinitely more appealing. Because even though he was good his rookie season, there's always the chance that it's like sort of a one-hit wonder type deal.
Like he maybe just levels out, or he never becomes quite what people expect.
And he might not now because you got Rose.
I know. That really does throw a wrinkle into it. I was just telling you the other day, there's a lot on his shoulders this season. Like, I think he is the most important player on that star-studded team.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely, because he needs to all of a sudden be this franchise cornerstone that's not in his prime yet, not fully developed yet, and won't necessarily be in the ideal situation to develop. I think it'll help to play more meaningful games, but it's not like – his usage rate is probably going to rank fourth or fifth on this team.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah, it's not
that's
ideal.
That's not what you should be. So, moving from that, yeah. Is there another team that you liked?
Yes, there is. I like the Bucks offseason, and it's not flashy. I'm pretty sure the only guys they added was Mirza Teletovic and Matthew Dellavedova, both role players at best. But on my little chart where I have the amount of wins over replacement added and the amount of wins over replacement player lost, stick with me for a second. The Bucks lost -4.5 wins. So essentially they added 4.5 wins just by letting guys go who were negatives for them last year. And that includes Jared Bayless, who is actually, he's the only one in this bunch that was positive. But OJ Mayo, Damon Inglis, Johnny O'Brien, and Grievous Vasquez, all gone, all replaced by slightly above average players in Teletovic and Dellavedova. And then you just kind of open up the rotation and the minutes for the young guys that are already there. You hope that guys like Giannis and Jabari Parker and Chris Middleton maybe take another step forward. I like this sort of growth from within strategy that the Bucks have taken. And just based on that wins over replacement, they actually had the second best offseason behind the Warriors. It was 7 compared to 17, but still.
Yeah. My response is just come talk to me after they move Greg Monroe.
That's waiting to drop for sure. Go ahead.
No, that's really all I have to say. I like the Teletovic signing. Wow, that was bad.
You got it.
Dellavedova makes sense. And again, they didn't lose anybody too integral. I think Jared Bayless was someone who could help them, but you got a guy like Matthew Dellavedova, who ironically costs more, though, but he's probably an upgrade defensively. So I think they had a good offseason, but I won't be impressed with them until they start playing John Henson more and ditch Greg Monroe.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And we've talked about this before, I think, on previous episodes, but there's got to be a suitor somewhere who would take a shot at Monroe. Maybe the Celtics. I mean, we talk about the Celtics with every trade, but I don't know.
There's a report out there right now from Howard Beck that there's literally no market for him.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking. It tough. Very, where does he go? Like, I think the only team I could come up with, and they don't necessarily have the ability to match salary and they can't absorb him, is the Charlotte Hornets, because Monroe is kind of like
the Al Jefferson younger guy.
Jefferson.
Yeah.
Right. But they have Roy Hibbert now. They also have guys in Kaminsky and Zeller who they want to run out. So just looking.
Did the Magic want him? I got to rescind what I said about the Celtics too, because I totally like ignored the fact that they just added Horford. So he doesn't really make sense there either.
Those Jahlil Okafor rumors are kicking me off. It is. Don't add Greg Monroe.
I'm assuming the Magic thing you just said was a joke, right? You just want to add another center to that crop?
Yeah, I was just saying they're collecting good stuff. Yeah. Hell.
Man, I don't know where he could go. The Blazers, maybe? They just got a Zeeley.
And they have Ed Davis, and they have Mason Plumlee.
Man. So here's the question then. Is Jason – he kind of showed a willingness to do this at the end of the season. Can Jason Kidd just make Monroe like a 15 to 20 minute a night bench player on that team?
He's probably going to have to. The other thing I was thinking is, why didn't the Lakers, instead of signing Timofey Mozgov, say, hey, we'll throw you a second round pick for Greg? Or just something like
– anything. Like just absorb him. Timofey Mozgov, man.
So – that's the other interesting thing. You mentioned the Celtics. I like them just because they got Al Horford. I do think they're going to miss Evan Turner more than people realize. Maybe Marcus Smart can play a bigger role off the bench, but Turner was so pivotal from a playmaking and defensive standpoint for them.
And on that same note, I kind of like the Blazers. A lot of people are banging that Evan Turner deal or hating
on it. That's awesome.
I like it a lot. I think the perfect complement to him, a non-shooting wing who can create, is two guards who can shoot. And a lot of people are wondering about taking the ball out of Lillard and McCollum's hands, but I think both of those guys will be fine as catch-and-shoot options when Turner's on the floor.
I think you use them, granted their size differentials, a la Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry. Run them off screens all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm looking really forward because Evan Turner can play the four. Please, oh please, let Terry Stotts run him out at the four, Crabb at the three, and then McCollum Lillard. I think that will be – Crabb was a great keep for them because he's an upgrade over Gerald Henderson because he doesn't really need the ball in his hands to be effective on offense. Mm-hmm. He's already a better closeout defender. The question I have, I do think – I thought I saw this, that Evan Turner was promised a starting spot in Portland, but then he said he wasn't. So in theory, you know, if the Blazers decide to leave Crabb and Turner – on the bench, they could have the first two $70+ million guys coming off the bench in NBA history, right?
I would assume that would be correct.
I'm assuming one of them will definitely not. They'll be in the starting lineup, but that would be really hysterical.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. It's got to be Crabb coming off the bench, I would think. I mean, the opening day starting lineup.
He's being paid more.
Is he really? Is he 75?
Yeah, he got 75.
Okay, and Turner was 70.
Right, and his has incentives that can go up to 83, I think, which is just absurd. Crabb is now the second highest paid player on a Western Conference playoff team.
Yeah, that's this free agency's been so crazy with stuff like that. Like, I understand the influx of money, and everybody who's not getting these contracts now will get their shot at one in a couple years, but it still looks weird.
Alan Crabb making $18.5 million looks weird. I'm not, yeah. But I love it. I'm not gonna lie, I love it.
It's going to start with Aminu still in the starting lineup, though, don't you think? Like Lillard, McCollum, Turner, Aminu, and Plumlee?
I think that's how you have to go. Unless they're done with Plumlee and want to start Azili.
What do you think about that? I think I might like Plumlee more than Azili. Yeah, I think he's like kind of underrated.
I do think Plumlee's kind of underrated. Azili's probably a better defender.
I'll give you that for sure.
Plumlee's a much better passer than Davis or Azili.
That's what I like about Plumlee right there, is the passing.
So, but what's good, though, is that Stotts can experiment because they're not paying any of their big men an obscene amount of money.
Yeah.
They're like, Ed Davis is actually their highest paid big man. Well, Myers Leonard now, which is the other thing. They're going to get rid of, my guess is probably Mason Plumlee is going to cost them too much because you have Leonard who needs to play the five.
Yeah.
And you have Azili and Ed Davis. Azili could leave next. Oh no, he's only non-guaranteed. That's team control for 2017-2018.
Wow,
that deal was a freaking steal.
There were some whispers about his health, right? Azili's.
Right. So if I'm assuming
Like
that
maybe that
factor.
drove the market down a little bit. But
So
that just
I.
makes me think, not to, I'm jumping around a little bit now, but Azeli was the deal that really put Mozgov into perspective for me. And there was a ton of guys who were more valuable than Mozgov and cost way less. Like what on earth were the Lakers thinking?
I don't know. I don't know. Like are Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss on their way out and just they know it, so they're
They're
trying
trying to
to do
torpedo it.
this. I mean, I didn't hate the Lual Deng
Me
signing though.
neither, honestly. I thought that one was fine. I get some people being concerned with how long it is, but I don't. I mean, it's
That
fine
was
from an
the
on the
market
court
this
thing.
year. I think they needed that veteran anchor. Like they,
Yeah.
especially with the locker room issues they had last year.
But Mozgov, and they signed him like 30 minutes after free agency opened, right?
So after that happened, and then again with the Joakim Noah stuff, I just assumed that we were going to see all these crazy deals for bigs like Azeli,
Yeah.
like Leonard, and we
And it
didn't.
cooled
Like,
off.
yeah, so
Here's
I don't.
listen to some of these bigs who were like way more valuable than Mozgov and signed for less money per year. Marvin Williams signed for less. Yan Mahinmi signed for the same amount. Let me think. Zaza Pachulia, obviously way less. He's not going to the Lakers though. Jared
Right, that.
Solinger signed for less. Cole Aldridge signed for less. I mean, David Lee's still on the market. He would have been better.
It doesn't, it just doesn't, it doesn't make sense. It
Jordan
does, like
Hill, like it's
for what the
crazy.
Lakers are trying to do, even just absorb freaking Greg Monroe. Just
That would have
there.
been way better.
So I'm at a loss. I didn't hate the Lakers offseason because you get to add Ingram. I think Calderon's probably a solid backup. They really need to get rid of Lou Williams and Nick Young.
Oh
That, like,
yeah,
those
that's
guys
got to
need.
be coming. Especially Young. I don't know about Lou
Nope.
Williams, but the Nick Young deal has to be coming.
Right, but they're gonna end up stretching him, right? Who's gonna take Nick
Yeah,
Young?
that's a good point. I can't imagine anyone. They still had a net positive in terms of wins over replacement just because they lost Kobe. And Deng and Calderon were both like comfortably over zero, and Mozgov was barely over zero. And like you said, I like Ingram. I like the growth of Russell and Clarkson, and so overall, I think it was an okay offseason. It's just I cannot get over that Mozgov deal.
No, I can't get past it. But on the bright side, and Adam said he doesn't necessarily like the idea of Lual Deng at the four, but Lual Deng played center for the Heat during the playoffs at points. A Deng, Ingram, Russell, Clarkson lineup.
Dude, I love Deng at the four.
So do I. I think it's perfect. I love Ingram at the four even too. Like if you want to run lineups where they're like super small and you're going to throw out. I don't even know who the other guy would be, but you could throw out Jose Calderon for all I care with Clarkson, Russell, and just put Ingram at the four. But I think that they have two of these combo forwards now in Deng and Ingram, and that's one of the biggest commodities to have in the NBA right now, and they have
Yep.
two of them.
Yeah, I think it's super important. And I think we're getting to a point now where almost every team in the NBA is going to have at least two guys, maybe three, and in some cases, maybe four, where it's just everybody kind of plays the same position. Everybody can create a little bit off the dribble, everybody can shoot. And the one guy who's different is maybe your rim protector.
Timofey Mozgov.
So the Lakers took some steps towards some of that. Obviously not the rim protector part. One more thing on Mozgov too that I thought was funny. I'm pretty sure he's older than Hibbert, or maybe like within a year, because I remember looking that up right after it
No, he
happened. And I,
is. Mozgov's 30.
yeah, is he older than Hibbert?
He just turned 30. Yeah, Hibbert doesn't turn 30 till December.
Isn't that just astonishing?
So why would you just kept Roy Hibbert?
It
I'm
doesn't
so
make any sense, man. None at all. Like that was the I think that's the weirdest slash worst deal of the summer.
it's without question the worst deal. It's not even like I thought Joakim Noah's deal was bad, but then I saw Mozgov's because like Noah's deal was done before free agency even started. But then you saw Mozgov's and you were like, oh, maybe it's not so bad because all the bigs are going to get this money. It ends up that Noah's deal still doesn't look that great, but Timofey Mozgov's looks
He makes
absolutely
everyone look
horrific.
better, man. There's a
Watch
few
him
more
watch him
teams.
be an
Go ahead.
all-star. just watch Timothy Mozgov be an all-star. He's going to start shooting threes.
Oh, man. The tradition of Lakers big men continues.
He's the next Shaq.
So there's actually a few more teams in the middle that I wanted to kind of run through quickly because we're getting short on time. But I do want to talk a little bit about each of these teams. And I'll just lay them out all at first, and then we'll go through them each.
I say we do one-word categorizations for them.
Okay. The Pelicans and the 76ers and the Mavericks. And the reason I picked them is because they're all right around zero in terms of net wins added. The Pelicans and the 76ers are exactly zero, and the Mavericks are at minus 0.27. But they both did things in the offseason. Start with the Pelicans. What did you think about their offseason?
I thought it was fine. I liked that they didn't go out and do anything too stupid. Solomon Hill's a risk, but he's young enough to where he could justify it. Langston Galloway is a pretty good pickup. Terrence Jones at the league minimum. I have no idea.
I like that a lot.
That was phenomenal. Dude, play him and Anthony Davis together will look. Get a Sheik out of there.
Yep.
So I didn't have a problem with their offseason, but I didn't think it was especially good. It was they are where they should be.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. And there was a lot of, like, I think there was a lot of people who were understandably concerned about the name value of some of these guys that they picked up. They don't really move the needle, but I think there's something about each of these guys that makes them kind of interesting. Like, Langston Galloway is fairly young. He does some things on defense. He can shoot a little bit. Solomon Hill, another guy who's kind of rangy, maybe can play three and four, does some things defensively, and then, like you said, that Terrence Jones signing was, I thought that was awesome. He hasn't been healthy or very good for the last couple of years, but the last time he was healthy, he was pretty dang good for the Rockets. And I think, like, resurrecting that Kentucky Wildcats front court with him and Davis at the 4-5, I think that would be really interesting. I would love to see what that looks like. Hopefully Gentry has what it takes to just, like you said, get a Sheik out of there, because I don't see how he helps them at all.
Right, and Terrence Jones is like a Jared Sollinger situation where I think they probably could have gotten more money elsewhere, but it was a matter of, let me see if I can drum up my stock in advance of 2017. As far as the Mavericks go, I think they're the king of contingency plans. I mean, you got Andrew Bogut for nothing,
yeah,
and he's only on a one-year deal. You got Deron Williams back for $9 million on a one-year deal. You paid Dirk, which is fine. And Harrison Barnes, I still think he can be good in an increased role. I know he had it easy with the Warriors this season, but he wasn't fully healthy for the entire year. The finals is definitely a red flag, but let's see what he does as a bigger part of the offense. And that's not a deal that's going to look terrible once the cap goes up again. So again, they're going to be right where they were last year, and that's probably a win considering how bad things could have been.
Yeah, I kind of like it too. On paper, the Deron Williams, Wesley Matthews, Harrison Barnes, Dirk, Bogut lineup isn't too bad. At the same time, there's part of me that could see it just like blowing up and the Mavericks finally miss out on the playoffs. But I've thought that for the last couple of years, and I've been proven wrong by Dirk and Carlisle like every time. But yeah, I don't think it was terrible. It's also just sort of their MO for the last few years has basically just been treading water. Like, they try to get big names, they try to rebuild things every year, but they basically are just in the same spot over and over and over.
Right. The Rockets would be them if they didn't have James Harden.
Yeah, that's like kind of true.
So, and that was the other offseason that was kind of, it looked lateral. I think the Rockets will be better because I love Clint Capella.
I think they're going to score like crazy, obviously. You add offensive talents in Anderson and Gordon.
Yeah, if Gordon stays healthy, Anderson stays healthy. Prigioni is going to be a fun backup guard there.
But the average score of their games is probably going to be like 115 to 115.
Good. I'll watch that.
Me too.
You also brought up the Sixers.
Yeah, I like the Sixers offseason a lot, but I want to hear what you thought about it.
Gerald Henderson and Jared Bayless were just good, like quality additions that don't break the bank. Get the veteran presence in there. The Sixers offseason will end up being a huge loss if they don't trade Jahlil Okafor.
That's true. I should definitely wait on that. He's got to go. But I love I I like those two additions. I love the Dario Saric, finally getting him to come over. Obviously, I love Ben Simmons. That's not free agency, but that's still an offseason addition for them. From what I saw in the summer league, I think Luwawu Cabarro can be solid. So suddenly Sam Hinkie's process is all like it's coming into focus now, and it's a really interesting crop of players. I just said the other day, like, maybe not this year, but conceivably in a couple of years, they could roll out a lineup that's like 6'10 Ben Simmons, 6'10 Dario Saric, 6'9 Robert Covington, 6'11 Nerlens Noel, and like whatever 7 foot Joel Embiid is. He seems like he grows every time I see a picture of him.
I mean, that, I don't know. That doesn't, that lineup doesn't make me like crazy excited because the lack of floor spacing. The last team I'd like to mention, again, I think the Sixers had a solid offseason. I still think Hinkie should be there, but yeah, different story. The Grizzlies were interesting to me. They're definitely betting big on their current core, and Parsons sort of gives them that stretch four they've never had during the grit and grind era. But can Parsons stay healthy? Can Gasol stay healthy? Didn't Conley have an Achilles injury? Isn't that what he had? Like, he was
always a tough one to come back from.
He's an, and it wasn't as serious as the other ones, like the Matthews one or the Chalmers one, but that's a big deal. And I'm not even criticizing his contract because he's that indispensable to their offense. But that team's a house of cards. I think they're right up there with the Bulls and the Knicks in terms of, hey, you could see these teams being really good, but you could see them, you could see Memphis sucking as well.
Yeah, that one is maybe even more than the Knicks dependent on health. Zach Randolph is approaching mid-30s if he's not already there. Mark Gasol missed most of last season with an injury. Like you said, Conley has injury concerns. And then Parsons, there's a lot of rumblings that the Mavericks didn't want to go anywhere near that deal because of his problems with his legs. And he's already in his late 20s too. I think people don't realize how old Parsons is for an NBA player. So that's a team I can see if they all stay healthy. I think on paper it clicks. I think Parsons is a seamless fit basketball-wise, and I could see them being like third or fourth in the West. But it's also conceivable that two or more of those guys is gone for a big chunk of the year, and then all of a sudden they could be hovering around 500. So I'm with you. That one's really interesting.
I'll like them a lot more if Fizdale staggers Zebos and Gasol's minutes and uses Parsons as a four. I think that
yeah,
would
be cool with that. And given his history with Miami, maybe he'll do that because they obviously did a lot of that with LeBron in Miami and Shane Battier.
I am wondering mid podcast. I'm thinking we spare our listeners burning bacon from this podcast since we've run roughly 1 hour and change.
Yeah, that's fine with me. Nothing is particularly burning my bacon right now. Anyway, I'm just so happy go lucky right now.
Twitter. itself, but yeah,
I was actually just thinking today, burning bacon could just be permanently transitioned to like who pissed us off on Twitter today.
I mean, that's probably gonna be a large chunk
because it's always that always happens there.
But so we will put Burns My Bacon on a one podcast hiatus. We will be back soon, we promise, unlike our other breaks in get-togethers recently. We'll be back with team previews, and if anything big happens, like, I don't know, who are the Celtics trying to trade for these days? Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook?
The whole league. They want every big contract.
It's going to be so awesome when they get Russell and Blake and Jimmy at the same time.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
But that will do it for us for now. If you want to follow Andy on Twitter, he is at Andrew D. Bailey, spelt like it sounds. I am at Dan Favale. That's F-A-V-A-L-E. You can find Adam Frommel at Frommel09. That's F-R-O-M-A-L-09. And all of us can be found at the kind of defunct Hardwood Knocks Twitter account.
Let's bring it back. Let's resurrect it.
I think we need to go back to doing those trivias. I've seen some complaints that we don't do those anymore.
Yeah, so trivia was fire.
So we'll get back to that too. We're making a lot of promises. We'll see how many of them are empty. But until next time, everyone, thanks for listening.
Shout out to... Who is it, Dan?
Dude's not even in the NBA anymore.
Shout out Beno Udrih.